Hey y'all, it's me, Dr. Samina Ramon, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. OBGYN, sexual medicine specialist, menopause specialist, and founder of the GYN and Sexual Medicine Collective. Today's conversation, I'm super excited about. I've been thinking about this for a while, actually. And so when I ran into Callie like last month or something, it was very striking to me. I mean, and trying to understand some of the work she does. That, like, you know, generational shifts are happening in workplaces and other places. But really, even how we think about our bodies and what our boundaries are and how we talk about hormones and our mental health. And so, you know, I feel like there's millennial women who are having conversations about burnout and ADHD and libido online. And then, you know, we have our Gen X and some millennials that are going through perimenopause, menopause. Gen Z's, you know, the new lingos that we're learning out there about boundaries and mental health stuff. There's so much to unpack here, but I found it very obvious actually recently when I watched the Scrubs reboot, because this is, I think, what I brought up with you. But when I watched the Scrubs reboot, it captured it so well. It captured everything about generational difference as well. And so when I ran into Callie last month at, Dr. Natalie Crawford's event. It was so awesome to hear the work she's doing. So I love what she does. She spent more than a decade incorporating learning and development in leading and training people across hundreds of retail locations, and now helps organizations and leaders understand how generational context shapes workplace behavior, communication, leadership, and culture. So generations really just don't inherit music and fashion, but they inherit like survival strategies and how we do things through the workplace. And so I want to get right into it. So Callie Foster, welcome to Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. So excited to have you.
I am so excited to be here. I have to tell you, it's so funny because I felt like when we ran into each other last month, it was a little bit kismet because there were several things that I feel like brought us together. And there's lots of, we've met before in a couple of different environments. And the first time that I met you was because you were creating this really safe, intimate space for, you know, it was maybe like 10 millennial and Gen Z women to just talk about like our bodies and what we were experiencing and get some like sex med, you know, there's like support and just like, I valued that space so much because I have found that I am that person for my friends. And I love doing that and being that, but I also am not in the medical field, so I don't have the answers. I just do the research. And so going and hearing you speak to this group was incredibly powerful for me. And I thought it was really fun to... I don't know if you remember, I was the first one to bring up a personal example.
Yeah, I do remember.
And it opened the space for the rest of the women to start jumping in and sharing their experience. And so I just so appreciate you for creating that container.
No, of course. Well, I was so intrigued to learn some of the stuff that you're doing, actually, and find it to be something that most people would find very interesting, I think, because most of us talk like about, you know, there are different generations. And if you're from one generation, you're usually like denigrating another generation. Yes. Was so much better than your generation. But like, tell me, like, I'm a gyno girl. I love a good backstory. Tell me what brought you into this space, you know, how you decided to like, you know, navigate like this. Like, was there something like what inspired you to say this is something that there's a need here that's not getting filled and I'm the person to fill it?
Oh my gosh, totally. Thanks for asking. So I was in corporate learning and development for about 12 years. I was leading teams and putting together strategies around training and facilitation and professional development for a pretty large organization. And I fell in love with creating those safe containers where I found that people were like opening up about things that they typically didn't at work with me. Oh my gosh, I'm creating a space where they open up. That's very cool. So When I left corporate in 2023, I went all in on coaching and went back to school for coaching, got a coaching certification, and was trying to figure out what my niche looked like. And I knew that it was going to be through a millennial lens no matter what, because I'm like a hard and fast millennial, right? Like, you look at the memes and the throwback, you know, that's posted on Instagram. I'm like, check, check, check. Yeah, exactly. And when I started sharing what I do in networking circles, saying, you know, I support millennial and Gen Z individuals as they sort of like ascend in their professional journey, people would respond to the Gen Z part immediately. Oh, Gen Z. Oh, da-da-da, stereotype this. Well, who's your favorite generation? And then when I would say Gen Z, people would be like, what? What do you mean? And so I was like, okay, wait, there's something here to this. And so I dove all in on understanding the sociological and societal context that raised each generation and is creating some very specific workplace behaviors that we're seeing play out today. And whether that's Gen Z or Gen X or millennial or baby boomer, and I know that's a lot of jargon, so we can, you know, talk about the where the
we might have to bring down what the years are, because there's so many arguments that happen. Well, I'm not, like, even my kids, my daughter's like, I am not Gen Alpha, whatever this new generation is. She's like, yeah. Gen Z, because I have a 7-year-old who's Gen Alpha. She's like, I'm not like that. And so it's like this whole huge, like, warring of the generations.
Yeah, totally. So, like, high level, there are 8 generations living today, which is the most in history ever, because people are living longer. And we have
profound.
Yeah, 8 is big, but there's about
4 or 5.
There's only about 4 that are actually in the workplace, though.
Oh.
So, Gen Beta is the youngest. They started being born in 2025. The oldest are like 18 months old. We don't know anything about them yet, other than that they are going to be for sure AI native.
They're gonna be fucked up. That's okay.
we'll see. Hopefully we catch on to this generational stuff that we're passing down before that happens.
Yeah. You're right. They're going to be really, AI is going to be rolling the rolling
big time. Yeah. And then we have Generation Alpha, which is, there's old, is about 14 years old right now. We have Gen Z, which is about like 14, 15 to 29. So they're almost hitting that 30-year-old mark, which is crazy. Gen Z is interesting.
My middle child is she just turned 14 and she's like, I am not Gen Alpha. So
yeah. So a lot of people say that.
Yeah.
They're considered cuspers or micro generations. They span like 2 to 3 years. Yeah. Yeah. So they'll adopt different traits. Yeah. And then you have after that, so you've got Gen Z, and they're as old as 29. And then you have millennials. I'm a millennial. They're like 1981 to 1996. Millennials are as old as 45. And people like don't believe that. They're shocked when I say that.
Yeah.
And then we have Gen X. Gen X is like, they were born from between 65 and 80. And then you have baby boomers. And baby boomers were 1946 to 1964. We have the silent or traditional generation, and those
are the boomers. I'm like, who puts before the boomers?
Yeah. That's the silent or traditional generation. That is the generation that was in World War II.
Yeah.
And then before that, we have the greatest generation, and they are, you know, around 100, and they're nicknamed the greatest
generation.
It's because they were around during the Great Depression. That's why they're called the greatest generation. Those are the 8 generations that are like living today, but there's only 4 really that are in the workplace, which is Gen Z, Millennial, Gen X, and Baby Boomers.
Yes. Okay. Awesome. Oh, so the greatest generation. Do you know how many people in the greatest generation exist? Because it seems like it's...
Oh, my gosh.
It's the
I would have to...
The centennials, you know, the 100.
Yeah. I would have to look. That number escapes me. I mean, I've seen the numbers for sure, but that one changes...
Daily.
Rapidly, right? So, like, I would look at that a year ago and it would be a very different number today.
Yeah, for sure. When you bring up the workplace, I find that. So, what I was saying in the intro was You know, I watched Scrubs when I was a resident. So Scrubs, I don't know if you watch Scrubs. It's a show on about the medical profession. It's a little bit of a comedy. It was on a little bit after Grey's Anatomy started. So I was a resident. And the reason I call myself Gyno Girl is because initially, so I was a resident with them. And they were, it's like a funny comedy, but it was kind of real. And there was a group of women in the hospital that were gynecologists that they called the Gyno Girls. Oh, here comes the Gyno Girls. And so I used to love that. And then I actually met the cast of Scrubs when I moved to LA. And I met them in LA at the Emmys when I attended 1 year. And I was like, oh, I'm actually a Gyno Girl. So then they called me Gyno Girl. Like, that's the only way they remembered who every time
I I love that. You coined it yourself, but specific using it in the real
world. Yeah, so like I'm actually a Gyno Girl because my husband and kids, they love comics. I mean, I do too. So we love superheroes. So I was like, yeah, I'm the superhero of Dallas.
I'm obsessed with that. I see the icon here on the screen in our little studio. And I'm like, yep, I love it. It's great. Oh, it's behind you too. I see that. I love it.
Anyway, so when I was going through Scrubs, you know, like I was the resident who was getting yelled at by my attendings because that was commonplace, right? You could really annihilate your resident and make them feel very small because they made a mistake. And also, you know, you worked 100-hour weeks. And also, like, when people were pregnant, I mean, I wasn't, but I had fit colleagues that were pregnant and going through it. And like, when I was a resident, you know, you just kept working. You know, like this kind of rhetoric that continued for a very long time. And now Scrubs is looking like when they do this, when they do their, like, this is what's happening to the characters now. So the Elvis attending is really upset because he can't yell at the younger residents. And they're all like, you know, going on TikTok, like, I'm going to TikTok him if he yells at me. Like, and then they would immediately have someone say, I'm sorry, you can't say that anymore. You know, like, so that was so interesting to me because it was like, it's such a generational difference in how we're even teaching medicine now, right? This toxic culture is not accepted. Like, you know, we call these residents soft because, you know, but that's what people think, right? Like, you know, like we learned in a very like sort of cruel manner where, you know, people were telling us that, you know, if you do this, this patient's going to die and you're an awful person versus like, you know, there's a create like, you know, you're being a little more ginger with these patients, like trying to be, I mean, not patients, residents and students, and they get one off and work-life balance is really important, which I love, but that wasn't what we were offered.
Yeah, you're totally. So like some of the hallmark things between some of the generations that I think that you're talking about right now, or I can sense that you're talking about, is Gen X was worked to the bone because baby boomers worked 80 and 90 hour weeks regularly, regardless of the field. So it could have been the medical field, but it could have been law. It could have been, you know, we'll Mad Men this one, advertising, right? It didn't matter what it was. Baby boomers were proud to be working these 80 to 90 hour weeks because they were stacking cash, right? It was like economic prosperity out the wazoo. And Gen X, it was a little bit different in the sense that they're latchkey kids. They came home to empty environments.
Yeah.
And they were like, I actually don't know if I want that for my family, but I get that that's the environment in the world that I'm living in right now. So, of course, they go into whatever field they're in.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's in the hospital or what have you, and they're working these long hours because that's the expectation from the generation before them. And then millennials come in to the scene, right? And they're starting to balance, well, wait, I've been watching this and I'm not sure I'm bought in, but I guess I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And social media kind of inserted itself, right? So now all the things that you're doing get documented. So if a doctor wants to go out and have a cocktail, suddenly that's on, you know, it's in 84 Facebook photos when we used to post 84 photos on Facebook at one time. And then Gen Z is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And you know, when we think about Gen Z being soft, they're the most emotionally, they have the best emotional language of any generation before them. Mm-hmm. And we actually have our Gen X parents to thank for that. So Gen X is primarily the parent of Gen Z. Yeah. And they were really shaped by this closer parenting. But you compound that.
As you call it, helicopter. We call it the helicopter.
But compound that with social media bullying, the constant feedback loop that Gen Z is getting, depression that people had during COVID, and then just the experience of like active shooter drills and gun violence in schools. Now that close parenting becomes hyper-protective parenting and emotional language. And I need to get my kids into therapy and make sure they're supported from a mental health perspective. Mm-hmm. So they're getting more mental health support than any other generation ever has.
Yeah.
And now when they're coming into the doctor's offices and the workforce, whether they're there as a doctor or there as a patient, they have a different set of language tools that they get to use, which while, maybe they're softer, they can speak to what they're experiencing in a way that none of us ever could.
100%. I see that actually. I see that in my patients. I take care of it. And I see it in my kids actually too. Like I just know that they have a higher level of, and it's true. You know, we therapize the hell out of it. And go into therapy, you need it. No, but it's true because like, I think we are more attuned with the fact that I do think that the other generations weren't, like when it comes to mental health, it was always like highly stigmatized. Now it's a little bit less. I think it's still stigmatized in some communities, but not so much. You just have to suck it up and bear it. And I think that trauma like lives generationally too. Like, can you talk to me about how you talk about generational trauma when it comes to some of this stuff? Like,
yeah, I mean, like realistically, we like our parents. So if I think about just even like, I feel like my like family line, if you will, is a good example of what a lot of people may have gone through, which is the inability to have these conversations with your family, have these conversations with your parents, right? My mother, for example, didn't talk about mental health, didn't talk about like body, fertility, reproduction, sex, perimenopause, anything like what's going on down there, any of that.
Yeah.
That never happened with my grandmother, right? And so as a result, my mother, I didn't talk about it as much. And I didn't feel that comfortable asking her. I mean, I think this is funny, but the best sex ed that I got was this book that my aunt gave me that had everything in it. I mean, it had puberty for both men and women. It had mental health and the differences in some of the hormones and cycle, like our cycles and all these things. Yeah. And it was this bright pink book. I can't remember what it was, but it changed my life.
Yeah.
And I learned more from that book than any other sex education I'd had to learn about myself and my body. And so while I didn't necessarily get it from my parents because generationally people just were less comfortable talking about it as you kind of get older in the generations, we know that to be the case now. And so people like you and people like me and people that are comfortable talking about this stuff are now able to change and shift and break that behavior pattern of feeling uncomfortable talking about it.
Yeah.
My husband's family, for example, his mom created such a safe space that when my husband's brother, when they lost their virginity, they ran into the room and shouted it.
Oh, right? My God. I mean,
so every family is different, but every family also has the opportunity to say, this actually didn't work for me. And I feel like this was a miss on what I received. And I would like to provide something different to my own children.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Because I do feel like generationally, like even how we have a relationship with our own body is different, right? Because you're right. Like I think other generations were taught silence. I know, definitely. And there's like a cultural aspect and then there's a generational aspect too, right? Like I think that there are issues with people understanding about, you know, shame and what their body parts are, what their body parts do. How do you think, like, what is your understanding of how these generations are looking more at sort of how they understand their own body parts?
Yeah. I mean, I think for millennial and Gen Z right now, just, through those perspectives, we know that Gen Z is the most sexually literate generation at their age. They just talk about it more openly. It's easier. It's more normalized. Yeah. It's talked about in therapy. And because they are the most they have the most diversity when it comes to gender spectrum and sexual orientation, that talking about these things and understanding more about what they like and what they don't like and what they're open to or not open to is more common. But with all that being said, there's actually also data that shows that they're having sex a lot less.
A lot less.
So,
I know.
Yeah.
I've seen the data on that too. It's interesting.
Yeah. And then millennials, well, frankly, both. Wellness culture has taken over. This capitalistic wellness culture, like, has allowed us to talk a lot more about hormones, has allowed us to talk a lot more about perimenopause, has allowed us to talk a lot more about fertility, right? And so I think that that's like the good side of this, like, wellness thing that's happening. I think there's some regulation that needs to go on there.
Sure.
But I think that just having these conversations in public spaces has allowed us to, again, be more comfortable. But I still have circles around me with my millennial cohort of people that are uncomfortable talking about it.
Yeah.
And I am someone who is open to talking about all of the things, right? Let's talk about fertility and hormones and my whole cycle of going through fertility preservation.
Yeah.
And let's talk about kink and let's talk about
all
the weird stuff that goes on between the hips. You know what I mean? And I really would love for more people to get comfortable in that space so that, again, we could provide that safety to the Gen Alphas and the Gen Betas.
Right. And really destigmatize it to the point where it's not, you know, again, we know that with all the stigma and the shame that comes with it, comes all these sexual like problems and medical issues that evolve. So, you know, the more I think that we're educating and open about it, the less stigma we can remove from it. So I agree with you. I mean, talk me through like your typical sort of client and what you do for them. Like, either coaching or, you know, interjecting into workplaces. Like, what's your typical person that would come to you and say, help us with X, Y, or Z?
Yeah. So I firmly believe that what goes on in your personal life impacts how you show up at work, and what happens at work impacts how you show up in your personal life, whether it's for your friends or your health or for yourself or for your family. Right. And so I very much believe in supporting the whole person. But the companies hire me, people hire me for one-on-one coaching for their high achieving Gen Z, early career individual who is figuring out how to build her confidence and build her brand and present the way that she wants to in the world, and maybe make sure that the work that she's doing feels values aligned and communicate her needs, all the way to the millennial executive. Because again, millennials are executives. They're 45 years old right now, which I think a lot of people forget, but who's got expanded scope and who is leading multi-generational teams.
Yeah.
And so whether it's the one-on-one coaching or bringing me in to help organizations engage and retain multi-generational talent, especially that Gen Z talent, that's really where I thrive. But the type of woman that is coming to me, the most common thing regardless is confidence and self-advocacy.
Mm.
How do I communicate what I'm doing, all the awesome things that I'm doing? How do I talk about the great things that I'm doing in a way that feels humble enough for me, but also make sure that I'm being my own press?
Right.
And again, building my confidence so that I feel like I can continue to grow and learn and like be this workplace badass that I know that I can be.
Yeah.
That's the woman, that's the avatar, and she's probably, you know, young mid-millennial.
Yeah. No, that makes sense actually. And I think that's a great and how do you talk to like different, like if you have say a department or you're going into an organization, how do you help them navigate the differences? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, people are colliding because, you know, your boss thinks that you're lazy, but actually this is not laziness. This is how you are preserving your mental health and your identity. You know what I'm saying? Like these things that come up. Like how do you resolve them? Like in as a person that comes in from the outside.
Yeah. The first thing and the most foundational thing that I like to do is do like basic foundational education on that sociological context that raised the generations. Because to your point, they're lazy is typically I'm doing the bare minimum at work because the work that I'm doing doesn't feed my soul. It's not aligned with my purpose. And also I watched all the generations before me work to the bone and I don't subscribe to that.
Yeah.
Also, Gen Z is the most entrepreneurial generation ever, like in history. And so they've got their day job and they're probably going home to a side hustle too.
Yeah.
So they're not lazy. They're just not interested in what it is that you as an employee or a manager is having them do.
Yeah. So there's just enough to fund their other creative outlet, I guess.
Totally. Totally. And I think like one of the things that I love to work with leaders on is how are you having a conversation with your team about how the work that they do specifically impacts a person, an organization, an output. Bonus points if it's socially responsible, because Gen Z is super into that, right?
Yeah.
And I say all this by with a caveat of all of what I say about different generations is based on data and trends, but every single person is unique.
Right.
So your job as a leader is to understand what hooks them. What are they interested in most?
Yeah. Yeah.
What makes them feel a sense of purpose, and figure out how to connect the work that they're doing to the impact that they make.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And this obviously, just like everything else, it's more nuanced and can't really make an algorithm for it. But
yeah,
I mean, speaking of algorithms, what do you think about how AI is affecting the workplace and how what's happening with the generations that interact with it and the generations that don't?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting problem to solve for because women have 22% higher chance of losing their job to AI than men. And that's just because their roles primarily are more automated roles. And women often think that it's not in their lane, that AI is not in their lane. Leaders, managers, there's also data that shows that managers and people leaders of any kind are pushing men to use AI more than they're pushing women. And the problem that I have with that, I saw a post about this a couple of months ago that really has stuck with me, is women are not in the room when it comes to AI decisions and AI development. And so what's happening is if women don't start engaging in AI more, it's going to get more male. So how do we, and it's going to continue to also mean that as women, our roles are at higher risk than men maybe in the same position in our organizations.
Yeah.
I would also say that we are literally removing ladder, like rungs in the career ladder, by saying, Gen Z, you need to have experience to come into the workplace. But in order to have experience, you have to have been doing some of this other work. But wait, we gave this work to automation. So this role actually doesn't exist in the company, and the role that would be above it is one that you're actually not prepared for. You haven't done, you don't have the experience for.
Yeah.
So it's a double-edged sword. And so Gen Z is feeling it, and I think women are feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really scary to enter the workforce as a Gen Z individual right now. But I will say, one thing that I love about AI across the board, and you've mentioned this on your podcast, but this is something that I have done personally myself, and then I heard you say it in one of your episodes. I didn't have language for one of the things that I was experiencing, and I was able to have a full conversation with Claude to get some details on what it was that I felt like I was going through, and I was able to bring that language with me to the doctor's office, and it made my conversation so much easier, and so much I could digest it better, and I was able to communicate my needs better. So I think there's a ton of value in AI. We're just not harnessing it the right way yet because we're moving so stinking fast.
It's so fast. I mean, just to think about, I feel like, you know, maybe ChatGPT has been out for a year or two, but it's probably longer than that actually. Or maybe short.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I have to look at.
No, actually, if I remember correctly, OpenAI, it was like in the 20-teens, like mid-20-teens, when OpenAI and ChatGPT first started to come to life. But we really only started seeing it when we saw the first, you know, Will Smith spaghetti video. I don't know if you, you've seen it.
Oh, great. Oh my God, that's crazy. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think you're...
I highly recommend looking at the evolution. There's like 5 videos now of how AI has evolved to do the Will Smith spaghetti video. And now he's sitting with his son having a full conversation while they're eating spaghetti. And it's like flawless.
Oh, wow. I'm going to look at that
thing. It's the benchmark for the progress of AI is Will Smith eating spaghetti.
Oh, wow. I'm going to look that up because I don't think I think I'd heard of it. I haven't seen it myself, though. So, I do think you're right, too, about just, you know, getting more women and girls into the STEM area where they think that they can't do this computer science stuff or coding, which is why some of these coding things are so important, because it is true. Whoever is making the algorithms is automating what they want, right? And so we can really automate sexism and racism till the cows come home, because the person making is probably a white male. You know? So it's like
1,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like feeding the box. They call it the black box that feeds the large language learning model, the LLMs.
Yeah. Yeah, we're like,
I don't know. See, this is a problem. This is a problem.
Okay.
Large learning modules. Is that right? Someone will correct me.
Quite. But, but I think the whole.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's large language models.
Large language.
But yeah. But my husband, who is an AI expert, will, you know, correct. He'll probably hear me saying that and be like, actually, it's.
It's good that you have someone, yeah. So,
yeah,
that's true. Because even some of the research that we're trying to do is in sort of AI and whether or not, like, the bias and dismissal that exists now in women's health, would it get automated if the right people weren't making, you know, the algorithms or whatever?
So, yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, so I wonder what that looks like from a women's health perspective, and how women that are key voices, not just I don't want to say just, but in addition to the female medical experts and the scientists that are working behind the scenes, the ones that are having a lot of these conversations like you, what does it look like to engage individuals like you, like Dr. Crawford, for example, and bring, you know, people into the conversation to help educate the models, coming from a woman instead of coming from, you know, old text, which frankly we know back in the day was maybe written by some women but had men's names on it just to get recognized.
It's true. Talk to me about if you went into like a medical center today and you saw that there was, you know, some issues happening between attending resident and student. Like, how do you think we can actually modernize medicine between the people that are learning it and the people that are teaching it?
Yeah.
Like, coming from your perspective, right? Like, someone that kind of helps generations understand each other, you know, because I have these reliving thoughts about, you know, being screamed at when I was an intern because I didn't do the right evaluation for a patient who might have had an ectopic pregnancy, or, you know, all the things that you remember. And that trauma kind of lives in you. And so obviously you want to diminish that for next generations. But on the same time, you want to make sure that these generations are learning medicine right so that they can take care of. So I think that's where so many people get concerned is like, oh, these are the people that are going to take care of us when we're old. And so what happens if they're just opening, you know, going on to OpenAI or open, you know, evidence to find all their information, which a lot of it might not even be true, you know? And some, I have a friend who's attending, it's a hospitalist, and she said, when I'm rounding with my Gen Z and millennial residents, instead of just knowing the answer, they get out their smartphone and type in the things. And she's like, it frustrates me because I feel like they're not communicating with the patient. They're not trying to understand. So how would you insert yourself to kind of help in that scenario?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different things that came up for me here. So we can work, let's work from like opening all the way to this end here.
Yeah.
But Gen Z, we know, is a hypersensitive generation, and it comes from their upbringing, right? It comes from what society and the pressures that society put on them. And so when you think about communicating with Gen Z, they don't operate in a command and control environment. They actually revert, right? They go inside themselves. They tell themselves that it's about them. It's their fault. It really impacts their self-esteem. So that command and control communication for somebody who's Gen Z is probably not going to be not only not received, but it won't digest because they'll be so distracted by the cortisol spike that they have from being put under pressure that it's not going to sit with them.
You're very great parenting skills right now. You're teaching me. Because what I'm learning is like the yelling I do to my kids is not going anywhere.
Yeah. So a great phrase to keep in mind with Gen Z is telling is yelling. So shifting from the command and control and telling them what to do into a coaching mindset. And a coaching mindset sits back and creates safe space, asks questions, and creates a space where it's okay if they fail when they're answering these questions that you have, because you're going to give them a space to think it through and use their critical thinking skills to think through it. But they might need a second because we raised them in an environment where they are used to being able to call on technology to get the answers. We raised them in that. And now we're frustrated. Now we're frustrated that that's what their default behavior is.
Yeah.
We have to shift that. We have to shift being frustrated with it because, again, we created that environment. So how do we create a safe space to shift that behavior into more critical thinking?
Oh, that's really good. I'm going to do better for my kids tonight, thanks to you.
Yeah, just remember, telling is yelling.
So you don't want it to yell.
No, you don't want to tell. You want to allow. So many times the people in front of us know the answer.
Yeah.
But we don't provide them enough space to do so. I mean, just think about it. When you are stressed and under pressure, it's harder to take the right action or think of the thing on the spot, right? And so for somebody who feels like they're being judged, for somebody who's feeling like they're being evaluated, they're already under pressure. And then you ask them a question and they don't know the answer. They're feeling that pressure. They're feeling that cortisol. They're feeling that adrenaline, and they cannot recall the answer or the words. We got to give them a little bit of grace to figure that out, to train and shift the behavior.
Very good. I love that. Telling is yelling. Okay, I'm going to remember that. That's good because I think that you're absolutely correct. This is the environment that they were raised in because this is what's happening in our society right now. And so unless you were being 100% restrictive, which it's really almost impossible to do, I think, then
Yeah. And so that's where that coaching mentality comes in. It's definitely what they prefer, and data shows it. I would.
And that you're a safe space.
Say it again.
How do you convince them this is a safe space if that's the behavior you've shown them in the past?
Yeah. You'll have to prove it over time, right? If you dug yourself into a hole, it's okay. Because you're going to learn how to get out of it. Because we trust ourselves enough, we know enough to be able to say, I'm actually going to shift the space that I didn't create before and say, you know what, it's okay. I'm actually working on allowing you to come up with the answers. So I'm working on removing my judgment, right? And a lot of times our ego gets in the way from having this conversation. If you have a resident that you're trying to teach, just as an example, if you have a resident that you're trying
to teach. Full disclosure, I don't treat my residents this way. I might treat my kids this way, but not my residents.
Well, and so if historically they haven't necessarily had the space to play and fail and all of that with you, how do you communicate that you are working to shift that and that you would love for their partnership in holding you accountable to shifting your behaviors to better serve them, right? Mm-hmm. I call this calling the elephant into the room because we avoid having this conversation because our ego is in the way.
Yeah.
But if we suppress the ego, if we recognize that the ego is blocking us from having this in-touch conversation, then we remove vulnerability from the scenario. And that show of vulnerability is the first step in rebuilding trust with that other person and creating safety, mm-hmm. right? We know that when we're vulnerable, it creates a safer space. So, hey, Samina, you know, I just wanted to let you know that I have realized that my command and control leadership might not be working in the way that that it has in the past. And so I'm adjusting and evolving and trying to create a safer space. Could you like let me know if this shift that I'm making is working for you so I can lean into it more?
Mm, I like it.
It's a weird conversation to have.
Yeah. How do you have it with your kids though? Hi, son. I'm really realizing the way I've been momming you.
I mean, you probably could. Yeah. I'm not a parent yet, but you know, I think that, and you know, I feel like you probably could have that conversation. And we know that kids often are more honest with us anyways. Yeah. So what would it look like for you to be like, hey, let's come up with a secret, like code word for when I'm being a jerk, you can say pineapple. And I know that like, I need to create a safe space for you because what I'm doing is command and control instead of safe space.
Safe space and reflection. Let them reflect. I like that. You should come into like some of the residency, like, you know, things. I'm sure, I don't know, if I have to look and see whether or not they have someone, because you know, the interns start in July, right? And so there's all this like, you know, the more generational differences we have, the more I see it. I see people struggling. I see attendings struggling sometimes. They're like,
yeah.
Oh, this makes me so mad.
Yeah. And I think there's different reasons why frustration exists, but the majority of it happens in breakdowns in communication and communication preferences, right? We all, generally speaking, want the same thing. We want respect for our experience and our expertise and our knowledge. We want to feel valued, right? Yeah. We want people to just treat each other well. We want to get paid for the work that we're doing.
Yeah.
And so, but the way that we try and accomplish those things are different by generation, right? So it's just a matter of understanding what the breakdown is between those and understand that we're all trying to get to the same place.
You have the same goal. I like that. I like that, Kelly. That's great. I love this conversation. Hopefully it resonates because I have a lot of medical doctors, nurse practitioners that listen. So hopefully people will be like, okay, that's what I should be doing with my underlings and juniors or kids. Anyway, I'm going to put in the show notes where everybody can find you, but I really appreciate this conversation. It's been great. If anyone wants to get in touch with Callie Foster, you can look in the show notes and tell us where we can find you otherwise.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Millennial Leadership Coach or at CallieFoster.com. But Samina, I have to tell you, I prepared a vaginal take.
Oh, you did? Okay, good, good. Okay.
I did.
Okay, give me your vaginal.
Yeah. And I kind of already hinted at it earlier, but I have to tell you, like, I firmly believe that we as millennial women, we're at this crossroads. We're 30 to 45 years old. We're exploring babies and family planning and extending our fertility runways. And we've got some in perimenopause and our relationship with our sexual health is changing, right? And I think the best thing that we can do through all of this is to remove the stigma around talking about it. I mean, becoming the safe person for you and your friend group, making sure that the women around you don't feel like they're navigating this in a silo, whether it's, again, sex med, hormone shifts, whatever it is that you're experiencing, find a space where you can have that conversation. And if you are not, if that space doesn't exist, create it within your circle. And I think it might feel uncomfortable, but I firmly believe that listening to podcasts like this and engaging with people like you who normalize all of this stuff will make it easier. And that will break the generational
cycle and behaviors that we have and allow us to normalize more of these conversations. So I appreciate you for inviting me here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I know. I love that. I love what you're saying. And I do see a lot of intergenerational friendships nowadays. Like people that are not, you know, because it used to be you just were friends with people that were a year above or below you. But now I see, even myself, I have friends that are maybe 10 years younger or 10 years older. And I think it's that normalization and destigmatization that happens, you know, or maybe we all have the same goals. Like a lot of us are all in the medical, special sexual medicine, or, you know, something about it. But it does, whatever brings us together, is destigmatizing, you know, those discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just so grateful for truly, again, for people like you for creating these spaces. So
thank you so much. Well, you're always welcome to come back. You know, next time we can talk more, because I had a list of things out. But, you know, sometimes I just like to talk off the cuff, and it makes me, because I'll come up with things and I'm like, wait, I want to ask you this. So, yeah, like 5 or 6 other things I was going to ask you.
Yeah, totally. Let me know. I mean, maybe we'll go to lunch or coffee and chat it out.
I would love to.
Yeah, let's do it.
Thanks. Yeah. Awesome. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening today. Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Samin Rahman, Gyno Girl. Remember, I'm here to educate so you can advocate for yourself. Please join me next week. Second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear. To get more information, my practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.